Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. Give the active people in your life something they'll truly appreciate. Performance apparel from Vuori. Whether they're into running, surfing, hiking, or even just casual walks around the block, there's something for everyone. And if you're not sure what to gift them, you can't go wrong with something from Vuori's Dream Knit collection. It's the perfect gift and so comfortable. Get 20% off your first purchase today at Vuori, Vuori.com/Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Rest Is Entertainment, the Questions Edition.
Questions and Answers Edition. I'm Richard Osman. You are?
Marina, hi.
Lovely to see you.
Very nice to see you, Richard.
And we're back in the same studio where your legs don't reach the floor.
My legs are still swinging like a small child on a swing. I've got some great any other business to begin with.
Okay.
You remember last week we talked about what happens if somebody throws a prop into the sea
or
into
a river. Those are the kind of questions we love. Yeah.
Okay, well, Mel Thompson's written in. She says, I'm a freelance TV art director, so I've often dealt with props being thrown into rivers. Marina's correct with her info, but now we're more environmentally conscious. A new solution has been found. Water-soluble dummy props.
Wow.
A friend was organising a scene involving a scuffle on a party boat on the Thames, and there was concern about the prop gun being dropped into the water. To solve this problem, a prop maker made a replica gun which would dissolve if dropped into the river. I've since used this solution on two shows where mobile phones were scripted to be thrown or dropped into the water. These replicas are strong enough to be handled and can withstand some water, e.g. rain.
Wow, I wonder if you could smuggle one onto a plane. A soluble gun.
It's really sad that you've taken something that's really amazing and creative and resourceful and just thought about doing a hijack with it.
That's what I do with everything.
Yeah.
I had so many other business, but which I won't go into. Jim Watso, thank you ever so much. I talked a couple of weeks ago about the Saudi Arabian snooker tournament where they have a golden ball at the end, which means you can get a 1-6-7 break. And he's gone into the physics for me of how hard you would have to hit a ball made of solid gold to make it go into the pocket. It's fascinating stuff, but you know what? Probably not for today.
Is it measured in newtons? I don't want. You're right. Why am I getting involved?
It's certainly measured in something.
Yeah.
Shall we get on to today's first
yes.
question? This is one for you, I think, Marina. Alex Elliott. Thank you, Alex. Can you explain the difference between based on or this is a true story at the start of dramas?
Okay. And there are many different variations of this now. I recently watched the British film Wicked Little Letters, and at the start it says, more of this is true than you'd think. And there are many different variations of this. But in that case, it's something that happened in the 1920s and everyone in that was dead. And as I don't know, maybe our listeners know, you cannot libel the dead. So you can say what you like about someone who is deceased.
We were almost going to call the podcast that.
Yeah, you can't libel the dead.
You cannot libel the dead.
Yeah, I know. That would be a good one.
You know what? I'm going to have a good old go.
Yeah.
So I've got a few things to say about Frank Sinatra.
You honestly can't libel the dead.
You can't libel the dead. Wow.
Another thing that's quite interesting and related to this is that no individual holds the legal right to the story of their own life. So as long as you've obtained the information lawfully and without any sort of subterfuge, then you are free to make a story about anything. However, as someone who's sort of been involved in various of these things before, there are competing rights. And the chief one is that you have the right not to have your reputation ruined or to be defamed. That is tricky. So what you'll find dramas which are based on a true story, for instance, ITV's Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. I remember saying to somebody when they were writing it, have they done all that? Because that's really just quite complicated. And so many of those people had obviously been through the absolute ringer. What they've done is they bought a lot of them up, as we put it. You pay someone the rights. And sometimes people, a friend of mine made a movie about someone who her true story was being told, but she had to have sort of poetic license explained to her to some degree. We have to make it like this for a reason. And so there is a certain amount of give and take. What writers often will end up doing in a complicated story like that is create a composite character, someone who serves the purpose of a number of different people. It's not so bitty, because real life is much more messy, of course. There are people who are not happy with the ways their stories have been told. I mean, there's an old saying in Hollywood, where there's a hit, there's a writ. Well, there was that Inventing Anna about the fraudster.
Yeah.
The Vanity Fair photo editor has sued Netflix over her portrayal in that, saying that they made her look like a sort of horrible, snobby idiot. The Queen's Gambit, that chess player, is still suing Netflix for saying she never faced men within that drama, because she felt, oh, that actually undermines my achievement. Mm. I face men, I beat men. But they left that out because they thought it made the story better.
You don't want to get sued by a chess player.
No, you don't want to get sued by a chess player. And actually, they've tried to have it struck out. That is still ongoing, and a judge refused to strike it out. So I think that one will go, that will happen, that case.
They have very good defence.
Yeah. Pam and Tommy, the drama about their sort of sex tape and their marriage, all they did, those people, was option a 2014 Vanity Fair article about how the sex tape came into the public domain. Pamela Anderson was really upset about that, hated the series, and made it very clear that she hated the series, but she didn't have any sort of legal recourse. She's doing her own one now.
Yeah, but essentially because they option the article, then all the kind of legal requirements was on the article.
I don't think, I mean, in our country, as we talked before about libel in this country, you would have a lot harder time. In the US, there's a lot of First Amendment stuff, and it's quite difficult to sue for libel, slander, whatever. She's actually going to make a rival thing about her own story. There was something that I was asked to write, and I still really want to write it, actually.
The Paul Chuckle story.
I can't talk about it because it's such a good idea that I didn't. I should say it wasn't my idea, but it was someone else's idea. But I felt like this is the way to do it. But it is only real life characters in it.
Right.
And some of them, funnily enough,
some of them were tabloid journalists.
A few of them. And I thought, you know, the one thing I can tell you is that those journalists would be the ones to sue. Journalists love to be talked about. They're so thin-skinned. I mean, really genuinely, they would probably be the bigger nightmare than all the people who the drama was actually about, who were much more sort of significant. But if you portrayed someone in a way they didn't like and they were a tabloid journalist, in so many cases they would sue. It's absolutely ridiculous, even though they moan about legal all the time.
So that thing at the beginning, based on a true story, or this is a true story, it's sort of a legal disclaimer.
Yes.
And the more stark it is, like this is a true story, the more either A, it's about dead people, or B, it's a very accurate reflection of what happened.
And they've probably been brought up. They've been brought up by the company, because otherwise you are open to a number of different legal actions.
Yeah, and this is based on a true story, gives you a little bit of wiggle room. And quite often they will say certain characters have been invented, certain scenes have been imagined.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as you say, normal life is too complicated for an ITV drama. By and large, you do have to sort of have composites of people. We once did a drama about snooker called The Rack Pack, which Sean Pye and Alan Connor wrote about Higgins and Davis. And it's brilliant. I think it's still on iPlayer. And Jimmy White was in it. And so they had to, as you say, they had to go and talk to Jimmy White and say that you're being represented and make sure this was okay. And they said, we're doing the bit where it's in the 1985 Goya Masters. And Jimmy said, yeah, I didn't play in the 1985 Goya Masters. And they had to go, Jimmy, you won it. But Jimmy White, as you can imagine, was an absolute delight and was very happy, you know, to sort of give his say-so. But yeah, you have to be very, very careful with real people.
Yes.
Do you not? And they, you know, people do have recourse. Oh, that's nice that they sort of bought up the stories on Mr. Bates. So they're making good money.
You have to buy people out. You might, and there might be various different pieces of source material. Say a celebrity's written a kind of early one of her first autobiographies, you might buy that up. You might, there's various different things, and really you want to get them on side, or at least not get have sort of complete enmity as what happened with Pamela Anderson in that documentary. Because saying that drama was sort of about how exploited she was by the whole situation, and clearly if she's out there the whole time saying I'm being exploited all over again, effectively she didn't say those exact words, but that's sort of what happened. She didn't get paid anything for it. It's not really great for your message of your big drama.
No one's listening anymore because they're all thinking, what's the project that that you want to do?
Well, hopefully it'll come to light one of these days. Oh, Richard, this is so one for you. Names in show titles. Chris Reed asks, why does Alan Carr have his name in the title of all his shows? Is this a branding thing he's deciding gets negotiated into every show he does? I've also just remembered the full title of House of Games. Richard Osman's House of Games. Mm. So I'm most definitely not passing judgment here.
Again, it's sort of like the true story one. It differs in each case. Now, Richard Osman's House of Games is called Richard Osman's House of Games because when we registered it, there was a show in Sweden or something called House of Games. So we couldn't call it House of Games. So they had to call it Richard Osman's House of Games. So it wasn't an ego thing on my part. But that said, when your name is in the title. It's, yeah, that's good for branding, and it's in the Radio Times, and people are having to say your name out loud, and it brings a sort of personalization to it. So it's not unhelpful to have your name in the title. It's sort of, it has some prestige to it. With Alan Carr, again, his name would be in the title because he often does remakes of other people's shows, and, you know, does lots of great game shows, and his name has great recognition.
He's cachet. It's a draw, yeah.
Cachet. So he did a show called Picture Slam. Now, when you're looking at the EPG on your television,
yep,
the electronic program guide, so you see what's on, and you can usually only see the first three or four words,
yeah,
of a program. Now, if that says Picture Slam, then you scroll past it, right? Because you
I
think,
don't
well,
watch I've, that.
I've
I don't
never,
know what it is.
I've never heard of it. So you go down to something you've heard of. If it says Alan Carr's Picture Slam, then it essentially says Alan Carr's, well, it'll probably say Alan Carr's P, but it would say Alan Carr. So, but you see the name Alan Carr, and you think, oh, well, I really like Alan Carr, so I'm going to watch that. So quite often these days, if you've got, you know, a celebrity who people like, you put their name first because on the EPG, you just see that. Other people have it contractually. Bob Monkhouse used to have lots, yeah, of Bob's Full House and all sorts of things like that. And that, I think, is just a branding thing. I think he thought that was a good way to bring everything in-house, and again, people liked him.
Lots of the documentary guys, or maybe there might be some ladies, have their names in the title, you know, whether it's Ross Kemp on This or That, or
yes,
Danny Dyer,
yeah,
you know, they're sort of brand strands in themselves.
Brand strands,
yeah. Sorry, I think I've done a tautology
that's
there,
a
good,
that's
but
a, yeah,
you know what I mean.
And again, that is because, simply because that is the format. There isn't a format other than Ross Kemp going, you,
yeah,
know, to the front line, or Danny Dyer visiting, you know, football's hardest gangs, or, you know, Britain's hardest bouncers. So their very presence is that format. In the game show world, I've never heard of somebody saying, I want this to be called my name and then the name of the show. That's not a negotiation I've ever had with anybody or an agent who've said, we want to do it, but it has to be Vernon Kay's All-Star Family
it's
Fortunes.
A deal breaker.
And, you know, it's just not something that happens. So if it's useful for the show, sometimes they'll put the name on. As I say, in my case with Richard Osman's House of Games, which, by the way, I never called it, ever. Although it's whenever you get...
No, in conversation, that is true to say. I can confirm, yeah, you will refer to it as House of Games, yeah, rather than saying your own name.
Although the acronym, like all TV shows have acronyms, like Have I Got News For You, I used to work on, was always Hignafy. Would I Lie To You was Wiltie.
Yeah.
House of Games is Rohog, because of Richard Osman's House of Games. So we always call it
Rohog.
Rohog. But yeah, by and large, it's something useful for the channel to have people's,
yeah,
names in the title. Things like Dale Winton, the wonderful Dale Winton, who sadly no longer with us, when he started Supermarket Sweep, and he wasn't particularly known, Dale, at that time.
Not at all.
And said to all of the contestants, would you call me Dale at the end of each of your sentences?
Did he?
Yeah. So on that show, a lot of the time they go, yes, I'm from Winchester, Dale. Or, oh, I'd probably spend the money on a new extension, Dale. And it got his name out there so quickly. And it's such a smart thing to do, but that's not necessarily an ego thing, because if you're a producer, you want that as well. You're taking a chance on a new presenter who you love because you've seen them, you know, do the pilots and what have you. But you want that name recognition. And so for you, having them say Dale at the end of every sentence is also incredibly useful. Oh. So it's one of those things. It brings people closer to it. But yeah, I'm honestly trying to think, I cannot think of a single occasion where it's been an ego thing that someone says, I'll do it, but it has to have my name on it. But yeah, House of Games, it was because we weren't allowed to call it House of Games.
Okay, good one.
Next question on Marina Hyde's The Rest Is Entertainment. This is from Connor Marlborough, and actually it's off the back of the props thrown into water during filming. He asked, when shooting on location in terrain such as sand, snow, mud, how do productions deal with footprints left by cast and crew members between takes? Are people on the shoot simply banned from stepping on the untouched ground prior to the first take, so the actors' footprints are the only ones visible in shot? I recently watched Denis Villeneuve's excellent Dune sequel, which was only slightly marred by the constant thought of how much of a nightmare masking all those footprints must have been. Broom or rake? Fix it in post. Connor has all sorts of suggestions, but again, a good question. What do we do about footprints?
Okay, normally there would be someone on set, of course, with a broom or a rake, and they have to get it back to normal as best as possible.
Like
between
a golf
takes.
Caddy.
Yeah, pretty much. And there are many different surfaces. And some things people have to wear the blue shoes, you know, the blue overshoes on lots of sets anyway, because lots of sets have got great kind of nice carpets, whatever. So most of the crew will wear those shoes. I'm working on something at the moment that's got one set, which is very beautiful and very shiny, and someone is constantly mopping that between each, or wow, you know, polishing it between each tape so it looks beautiful.
Like the Olympic curling.
Yeah, yes. On something like Dune 2, they would have taken a lot of it out in post because you've got quite a lot of money and you can do that with VFX. Having said that, given how spectacular it is, and it is incredibly spectacular, it's made for $190 million. Obviously a huge amount of money, but not compared to what a lot of the big franchise movies may spend another sort of 50% on top of that easily. So you don't want to take too much out in post, although footprints are a lot easier. And there's a lot of software now. I've spoken to somebody about this and they said, oh, there's lots of software now that even if you're doing your own movies, you can take it out.
Yeah. They call it the Kate Middleton suite.
I spoke to a photographer who was interesting about this, who said, work out as soon as you sort of get out of your vehicle where you're going to be photographing, because you're not going to be able to clean it up and make it look as beautiful as it was before. And he said, I've done things like that where I've thought, right, the place I'm standing is the bit that would have looked best in the picture. So then it will have footprints. And I think you can only sort of use it for one of those terrible, trite Instagram captions that says the longest journey starts with a simple step and you've got some footprints in the sand or something like
take,
that. You know,
take nothing but memories, leave nothing but footprints.
Oh, the perfect one, obviously. Yeah. Okay, so that sort of thing. But in movies, they do take them out and somebody is carefully raking between shots, but there will still be disturbance to it and they will probably fix that in post, but it's not the most expensive thing to fix in post.
It's one of those extraordinary things about any type of filming is there are people's jobs you would literally not believe. The most extraordinary tiny little things that have to be done all day, every day, whether you're making TV, film or anything. And one of the great things about TV and film is that infinite capacity to take pains, to make something look as real as possible and never take people out of the story. And there are just people whose job, and they're so professional and brilliant at it, is to make everything look perfect at all times, which is why people love it when they're, you know, like a coffee cup is left on Downton Abbey. Because they go, finally, I get what, if we just left this to just, you know, if we just left this randomly, you know, this is how it would be all the time. And it's amazing the incredible attention to detail that people have.
And often when you see really bad effects in stuff like Marvel movies, it's because they call it the crunch. They have no time and they've tried to fix everything in post. And these it's a big part of why VFX laborers are trying to unionize now, because it is an absolute nightmare and they're working like 18 hours days and they can't fix everything in post. And it's become the sort of thing like, don't worry, we'll deal with that. We'll deal with that. And in the end, it's like, am I making the whole movie on a computer view at the end? And it's just not possible in the timeframes.
Yeah.
And these VFX houses are completely maxed out and the workers are exhausted and they are all trying to unionise now.
Yeah, and that, please sweep up your own footsteps.
Yeah, can you please at least not tread all over the set? Let us now go to a break, Richard.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. Give the active people in your life something they'll truly appreciate. Performance apparel from Vuori. Whether they're into running, surfing, hiking, or even just casual walks around the block, there's something for everyone. And if you're not sure what to gift them, you can't go wrong with something from Vuori's Dream Knit collection. It's the perfect gift and so comfortable. Get 20% off your first purchase today at Vuori, Vuori.com/Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Questions and Answers edition of... Someone was furious last week because you said questions and answers.
I know.
And they said you have to absolutely stick to your guns.
I have to make the same mistake every week.
It's not a mistake. It's just it's a disagreement.
I think it probably was the first time, but it's become a thing. Okay, I really like this question from Jonathan Gare. I've always wondered if Susie Dent plays along while filming Countdown, or does she have a computer to help? They always ask Susie if the contestants could have done any better, and she always has an answer.
I was in Dictionary Corner recently, And I'd never done it before, but it's hosted by Colin Murray now. And I've worked with Colin before. I've worked with Susie and Rachel before as well. So I said yes, because it's a fun thing to do. And, you know, I've always watched Countdown, and my grandparents used to watch it. I just remember my granddad sitting there with his pad and pen and, you know, writing down the answers. So I was delighted to go and do it. The way it works is, the producer on that was a guy called Damien Eady, who's a former Countdown champion, one of the greatest Countdown champions of all time.
One of the greatest career arcs of all time.
Yes, exactly.
Now runs the show.
He now runs that entire show. And the letters all come up, and I'm trying to work out what the answer is. Susie's also doing it as well and kind of looking things up. So in the gallery, so Susie and Damien are both playing it just like they'd be playing, because they happen to be incredibly good at Countdown.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm playing it as well, and you know.
I don't think you'd be too shabby, if I'm honest.
But slightly worse than Susie, and a lot worse than Damien Eady. Now, I don't think I ever got to the stage. You can hear Damien in your ear. He always gets the biggest ones, because that's his thing. There's a computer that can back it up if you need it. But by and large, Damien is the computer, and by and large, Susie would have had it anyway. When you use the computer, as if there's a very unusual word in there that, again, someone like Damien will always get, because they know all the words, but a word that needs explaining, or a word that Susie wouldn't necessarily have, you know, at the front of her brain. So she's got a computer for that, and she's got an earpiece for that. But the fun of making that show, they couldn't have made that show for so long if they're not playing along.
No.
Is the truth. So Colin is playing along, Susie's playing along, Rachel is playing along. And when you're in Dictionary Corner, you're also playing along. And sometimes Susie will very kindly write things down for you. And she'll write down an answer.
Susie, don't crib. Yeah, I'd quite like
she'll
that
say,
for life.
This is here, or that's here. And I always make it a thing of it. If Susie came up with that, I always say, Susie just told me. Sometimes I watch it, and there's people on there who sort of haven't got an answer, and they go, yes, I've got a diminoid, which I think, Susie, sorry, is that, I think it's something. And you think, oh, she
great.
Just,
so you know
she
about
told
those people
you
now.
That. But yeah, that show, because they've done so many thousands of episodes, I think it would drive them mad if they weren't playing along.
And you'd sense that there'd be real niggle between the audience, who would also know that they're doing it, and there'd be a real, I think there'd be a foie d'oeuvre, a tension within
exactly.
the Countdown studio, which I don't think any of us ever wishes
None
to
of
see
us wish,
and of
I,
all
well,
places.
That's a very happy crew on that show at the moment, Colin and Rachel and Susie. I think they've got it how they like it. I recently made the argument, which I stick by, that Susie Dent is the longest running host in British television history. People often say, oh, it's Magnus Magnusson, or it's Sue Barker, but it's Susie Dent in terms of the amount of shows she's done.
Yeah.
And with Pointless, they always said, oh, I did 2,000 episodes. And I said, well, if I'm a co-host on that, so Susie does
so
the same
Susie,
job.
Yeah.
And so she's the longest running host on British television.
Well,
but it's fun. It's fun to do Countdown. But it's fun to record because you play along. And so if someone is a fan of Countdown, it's an absolute joy. Cats Countdown is fun to record as well, but in a very different way. Because, you know, first time I went on Cats Countdown, which is a show I used to produce, it's funny and Joe Wilkinson's mucking about and everyone's brilliant. But a bit of you is going, yeah, just get onto the letters, because I want to. I've never played. The first time I ever did Countdown was Cats Countdown. I was like, I just want to play though.
Yeah.
So just let me. Yeah. And the numbers, I'm like, it's all very well, Jimmy, you're driving around in a tiny little car with Joe Wilkinson in a sumo suit on your back. But I'm really trying to work out this sum. So just bear with me. But Dictionary Corner is as lovely as you'd imagine it to be.
Thank you for lifting the curtain on it and not being something hideous behind it.
Oh my, can you imagine?
Yeah.
If it was an expose.
Absolute snake pit.
Yeah.
Vicious. It will cut your legs off.
It is annoyingly, genuinely as lovely as it seems. But things, you know, you can see that on screen with shows, I think, sometimes.
Definitely.
I always think on House of Games, we have such fun recording it, and that takes away an awful lot of the producing, because just the very fact of people enjoying themselves really sees you through. And I think there have been eras in Countdown history where they haven't enjoyed it so much.
I was going to say, in a similarly euphemistic way, I think there have been eras in Countdown history where they haven't. Yeah.
Those eras are now over.
They are.
Yeah. Or that era is now over. But
just,
you know,
memories now.
By and large, it's been fun from start to finish, with the odd blip. A question from Andrew Shearer. He asked, I don't think there's an answer to this, but I think it would be a very good subject for a PhD. He asked, re your discussion of social media, short clips and dopamine, I wanted to ask, was You've Been Framed our gateway drug?
Oh my God, that's like, I feel like that's a sort of 15,000 word deep dive that I would 100% read. Yeah, it was like YouTube before YouTube, wasn't it? Because it's been going so, I'm going to get this wrong, it would be close to four decades, maybe say 35-ish years. If I've got that wrong, please write in and tell me that I'm wrong. Right back at the start of that, by the way, how expensive would video cameras have been? They were it was quite a sort of thing if you got these things. And some of them began as perhaps TV bloopers from other countries almost.
Yeah, well, all the clips were from America by and large. We once, 20-odd years ago, I think for Channel 5, they had bought an archive of Russian home video clips and said, could we do something with them? And a lot of them, by the way, you couldn't. But there are a few we did. Yeah, and we made a show called Lights, Camera, Accident. And it was, but it was all based. They bought this archive
called Trauma Zone, the Adam Curtis documentary, where Adam Curtis is amazing. He made these incredible films, which you can still see as all his amazing work on BBC iPlayer, where he was given the entire archive of every single piece of news footage shot in the BBC during former Soviet Union. Wow. And he told the story of the collapse of communism and then effectively the sort of collapse in some ways of capitalism giving way to gangster capitalism. That's Trauma Zone, but you can see it on iPlayer. But that sounds to me like the Pratfall Trauma Zone, where you've
Lights,
got all
Camera,
the
Accident was like that, but classier.
Yeah,
exactly. So essentially, companies started in the 80s. They built up huge libraries of these clips. They would just buy clips, and it wouldn't cost them a huge amount. And everyone would go, "Oh my god, I can make £250 if I sell this."
It was £250, wasn't it? Yeah.
But someone's built this enormous empire off the back
and
of
they
these
failed
clips.
To build YouTube. Why didn't they just build YouTube?
The original producers must have gone, do you know what? We are the cleverest guys in the whole world. We're making money out of 15-second clips.
We are making an hour of ITV content every week.
We're making nearly $7,000 or $8,000 a week out of these clips. We are the greatest geniuses. But it's true.
Silicon Wallies.
But I used to... nice. Is that the new? No, is that the series
appalling.
You're doing?
I want to apologise for that. So please don't write in because I'm apologising having just made the joke.
I used to absolutely love You've Been Framed. Again, because it is laughs per second. I remember once there was a Best of You've Been Framed. And I can't remember who I was talking to. I just said, well, that's got to be the best programme ever made because You've Been Framed is the best programme ever. And this is the best of the best programme ever. That's the best programme of all time. But, you know, it tends not to win all the BAFTAs. But when Harry Hill used to do it, I used to watch it with my kids when Harry Hill was doing the VO on it as well.
He is peerless.
Yeah. They've made a brilliant show even better. But now there's so many millions and millions of clips. And it's funny that show doesn't really exist anymore because the whole of our culture
is that
show.
It's like 5 hours of people's day is watching short clips immediately, anything in their pocket.
It's a good question.
Please can someone point me in the direction of a 15,000-word deep dive on it because I would 100% read.
Yeah, I knew it the moment I saw Jeremy Beadle. I knew it. I saw the future.
Once again, he's the precursor.
Yeah.
The harbinger.
Beadle was the harbinger.
Yeah.
That's all we have time for today. That was a lot of fun.
That was much fun.
Thank you so much, as always, for listening or for watching if you're watching on YouTube.
Keep sending in your questions to therestisentertainment@gmail.com. And if you want to continue on that deep dive down the props, I don't know where this will take us. By the end, we'll be like, okay, we can't have any more props questions. But it's very interesting.
Yeah. When people wear hats... They do, actually. Anytime you wear any costume, they take a photo of you, don't they? So they can see exactly the angle of everything. But listen.
Yes. Continuity is fascinating. Yeah. It doesn't sound a bit, it actually is.
We'll do that alongside our four-part Scrappy-Doo series that we're planning to do. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next Tuesday.
We will do.
Bye.
Bye-bye.